morning, Tucson and Southern Arizona. Welcome into the 10-3 The Voice studios for this drive time hour of Tipping Point, daily in-depth news, conversation, and talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. I'm your host, Zach Yenser. Here's what's on tap for today. Welcome on in. We'll get started. We're going to have our conversation with our faith and culture contributor, Pastor Jeff Logsdon, as we have looked at the declining rates of participation and attendance in church, down below 50% in one Gallup poll for the first time since they were tracking these numbers since the 1930s. We talk some faith, we talk some culture, we talk faith and culture, and we're in the middle of a couple of conversations with different generations around church and the place they see or don't see for it, hearing from real life people as we wander our way through that conversation. At the bottom of the hour, Callie Tipp will be on. She's a board member for the Vail Unified School District. We're going to ask her why a board meeting a couple weeks ago became national news. Should kids be required to wear masks in schools? And if it's up to each school board, as the county administrator said yesterday in Pima County, why is Vail continuing? Callie Tippett will be on the show with us for the second half of our program today. 790-2040 is the call-in number. And it's the number that our guests used to join us today. Pastor Jeff Logsdon, our faith and culture contributor, good morning to you.
Hey, good morning, Zach. Happy Cinco de Mayo.
Good to see you. Good to be with you. Our man of the cloth in shorts and a t-shirt, and it is that season again, so I'm assuming you're in shorts and a t-shirt. Now, Jamie, absolutely. I don't know as well, and I'm not going to make a guess there, but Jamie, good morning to you.
Good morning.
It's good to be with you. Pastor Jeff, kick us off here. We're going to talk Gen X and the church today. What are we talking about, and who's Jamie?
Yeah, I think as we've been sharing about the cultural trends and decline in the local church, we were looking at how that applies to each generation. You had an incidental conversation with someone who was Gen Z who said, hey, I'd be happy to share my thoughts on that. And that led into a discussion with Jamie, who represents Gen X. And you know, why it's important for the church to continue to proliferate in the face of things going on in our culture, certainly in Tucson, with the greater needs that we have in the community. So Jamie is a great friend, someone who's involved in the immediate community, connected to social services and connected to the local church. And she said she would be willing to share her thoughts.
I love it. Jamie and Pastor Jeff Logsdon, Hope City Church, a church here on 22nd in Tucson. Highlights include there's data, rather, that Gen X participation is down by about 8% between 2007 and 2014. Pastor Jeff, what questions do you have as a pastor of a church for Jamie as a member of Generation X this morning?
Yeah, I think one of the questions that I had for Jamie was related to what your experience has been with the church and what that looks like today.
As far as why I go to church now, it has to do with actually really focusing inward to make an outward impact in my community and my sphere of influence.
Pastor Jeff, back to you.
Yeah, so when you mentioned making having an inward focus, internal values, if you will, and how that has influenced you, what are some ways that you've seen that happen as you've gotten connected to the church?
Well, my values have changed as I've grown up. You know, when you're in your 20s, you look at life differently. It's more about you. In your 30s, you tend to be more settled and have a family life, so you become less selfish and want to develop yourself in a new way.
Yeah, as I'm curious along with Pastor Jeff, you know, Jamie, thinking about the fact that while it's less than millennials or Generation Z who are seeing leave the church or become less interested in it in large numbers, that 8% drop, you know, that has continued since, you know, the 2010 timeframe. Is interesting to me. When you look at your network, at your circles, do you see that trend? Do you see fellow Gen Xers either leaving the church or not engaging with the church? And if so, why?
So I do see people leaving church, and I do find that there is sometimes unrealistic expectations on the people that attend church and the leaders that lead church. I find that there's a standard that is set that is not achievable. And I think that is people relying on people instead of people relying on God.
Would this is, are you referencing, you know, things like the Ravi Zacharias scandal or the Jerry Falwell Jr. scandal? Are you talking about a variety of high-profile leaders having moral failings in the church, and that is that, you know, often I hear some critics call that hypocrisy or, you know, moral superiority that isn't backed up by actions. Is that, in your mind, what is really pushing Gen X away specifically? Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, it can be, but I think it can be down to the minimal stuff. As far as the expectations on a one-on-one level, and then also small group level. It doesn't necessarily have to be what our biggest leaders or famous leaders, as you will, or what makes them famous by their choices or actions. It really can just be in the, I don't know how to say this, just the generalized expectation that the word Christian implies perfection. And that's very far from the truth. We're always in pursuit of consistency.
Pastor Jeff, your thoughts as a pastor of a church, again, you and I have begun this conversation of looking at the decline in church attendance and trying to figure out, and it does differ a bit by generation. You're a pastor of a church. Well, what are your thoughts so far on this?
I think what I hear Jamie saying is that the broader community is looking for from the church, how are you different? How are your value systems different? How are you relating to the same challenges we face in a way that rises above the cultural norm? It reminds me of a time where there was an individual who was part of a Narcotics Anonymous meeting that attended our church in Southern California. And after being a part of the NA meeting for a few years, he decided to venture into the four walls of the church. And he had this mile-long stare after church on Sunday. And I asked him what was going on in his mind. And he said, I can't believe I'm here, as if it were like this utopian society. And I told him and kind of bursted his bubble. I said, look, this group of people in the church is no different than the people in NA. They're just working towards a different end goal, if you will, one that certainly encompasses sobriety, but you know, one that Jamie talks about in spiritual, with spiritual values and a core set of beliefs. And I agree with what she's saying, and I would just add that I think the community needs to see the church behave differently.
You know, it reminds me, I'd love to get Jamie's thoughts on this. It reminds me of a survey that a group did. It's called the Barna Group. And they presented a few images to people, and they said, what image do you think reflects most what you think the church should be? And the four images were of a watering can watering flowers, so kind of cultivating beauty, cultivating personal growth. There was the small group setting of people coming together to learn and grow together. And then there were images of a hospital and a gym. Kind of reflecting that idea of, you know, I think it's a famous, was it a Pope who said that a church is a hospital. And then there's kind of that idea of the church is a club. And in the last 40, 50 years, we've seen a lot of people want to see a church that's like a social club. And so that's kind of the gym concept. So they set these images in front of people. And it's interesting to see how different generations go, well, this is what I want church to be. Jamie, if you had to pick between those four images, the flower being watered, the small group, the hospital, or the gym, what image do you think Generation X is wanting their church to be in their community today?
Well, honestly, that's hard because the church really should be all of those. The gym kind of bothered me in the description as that it's a club because I look at it as working out, that you need to work out the skills that you're being taught and cultivated. As far as what the church should look like, it's most likely a hospital. We are supposed to serve one another in all areas of what's happening in your life, whether it's good, in the middle, or bad.
Pastor Jeff, we're really thankful to have Jamie with us this morning. Any thoughts on that and kind of what you're hearing from Jamie as we close this segment? And then you and I will debrief a little bit in the second. But any thoughts here as we talk to Jamie, who's a part of Gen X, and her views on the church this morning?
Well, I want to thank Jamie for being a part and just contributing her ideas. And hopefully that stimulates some provoking thoughts for those listening. I think there is a shift that we're seeing from previous generations where the church was available to serve those exclusively within the church, its members, if you will. And I think in order for the church to endure this season, if you will, it's going to have to look outside of itself and how it can be a resource to the community apart from any sort of inclusivity just for its members.
Pastor Jeff, thank you. Jamie, it was great to have you on air. Thanks for spending some time with us and sharing your perspective this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. We're going to go to our first break of the hour, our last break of this conversation, part two with Pastor Jeff Loxton, our faith and culture contributor, as we look and seek for those reference points that create a healthy community life that are bigger than ourselves. We got to do it. We got to do it in these times. We do it every week with our pastor, Jeff Loxton, our faith and culture contributor. When we come back, we'll continue this conversation. We're seeing the generations leaving church. Why and what to do about it? Don't go anywhere here on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk.
Real issues with real people. Tipping Point with Zach Yenser, 1030 The Voice.
If you are current or previous law enforcement, fire, paramedic, or military and are considering buying or selling real estate, then listen up. CNC Partners is dedicated to serving those who serve. When you buy or sell with their real estate team, they will give 10% of their commission back to you and your family at closing, as well as donate an additional 5% to the charity of your choice that serves first responders and or the military. If you're interested in this program, reach out directly at 520-406-0233. That's 406-0233.
Your Tucson Museum of Art is pleased to share the imagery of America in The Wyeths, three generations of works from the Bank of America collection. Artistic styles vary across time and place, but the bond of family unites them and the shared spirit of human experience and American traditions. Timed ticket reservations required. Visit TucsonMuseumOfArt.org for more information and to support the Tucson Museum of Art.
The Men in Black are back. FC Tucson is our city's own professional soccer team, featuring talent from around the country and the world. They're ready to get back to business and a winning season for Tucson fans. Each one of the 14 home games this season will be uniquely curated and feature the sights, smells, and sounds of Tucson, but with the intensity of a playoff berth at Keno Stadium. Tickets now on sale. Head to fctucson.com to get yours for an exciting season of high-flying football. fctucson.com.
You love Decibel Coffee Works, the coffee of Tipping Point and the Yenser household, for their quality roasted coffee and beans. Now they're giving you even more reasons. Open now, the Scratch Kitchen at the MSA Annex will provide quick and easy breakfast and lunch with vegetarian and vegan options available to enjoy with your drink. Visit the MSA Annex right off the I-10 and Cushing to be one of the first to try. 267 South Avenida del Convento. In 1994, the University of Arizona took the bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. With over 25 years of success, Tech Parks Arizona continues to advance innovation. Whether it's 40 startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new Tech Park at the Bridges that just broke ground, they are integral in shaping the future of Southern Arizona. Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business.
Tucson's source for trusted news and talk. 1030, The Voice.
Good morning, Tucson and Southern Arizona. Zach Yenser here, your host of this drive time hour of Tipping Point with Zach Yenser on 1030 The Voice. Vail Unified School District board member Callie Tippett, that conversation around the corner. Why did a recent board meeting in Vail make national news? Should kids be wearing masks in schools? And what is Vail thinking they're going to do about it with just a few weeks left of the school year? That conversation and more around the corner. We're with Pastor Jeff Loxton, our faith and culture contributor on the program this morning. We stumbled into a conversation a number of weeks ago as we look for those reference points that bring context to our community life, our political life. If everything is political, nothing is. And so we try to bring those reference points to the conversations that we have every week here on the program. We stumbled into this research that shows that less Americans than almost 100 years are a part of a local church. Perhaps not a surprise to some, but certainly something that we wanted to look into. And so we've been having conversations with different generational members to go, do you go to church? Is it valuable to you? And why or why not? And what are you hearing from your fellow generation members? But Pastor Jeff, that was an interesting conversation with Jamie. I wanted to share this because I brought it up in the first segment. I mentioned those four images. This was research done in 2015, specifically targeting millennials. And it was the kind of the social intellectual component of church, where it's a small group. Then there was a picture of a gym, a fitness club, a hospital, and then a flower being cultivated, speaking to, I think, personal growth, community engagement, and nature. Pastor Jeff, 48% of all millennials said that the picture that spoke to that they wanted the church to be most was that social intellectual part, was that getting together in community and working together. 33% said that they wanted the church to be that place where there was a cultivation of value in the community, where there was personal growth. 7% said the church should be a gym. 12% said the church should be a hospital. So if you're a pastor out there and say the church is a hospital for sinners, you may not be connecting to millennials, but I don't know about Gen X. But I thought that research was interesting, Pastor Jeff. There you go.
Yeah, I think each person resonates with a different image depending on life experience, and I think all of them have their validity. I was asking you at the break which one you most identify with. You want to share that?
Yeah, I would say it's the flower being watered in the sense that I look at that image. And I think for many decades, the church had a role in community development, in economic development, in education, and being a sort of parish that tied the spiritual, physical, and community life together. And I think that the church's geography has been so watered down to where the church is a one-day experience, not a seven-day structure.
Yeah.
I think that coming out of COVID, Pastor Jeff, I think that it's going to be that kind of church that that maintains relevance and maintains impact in a community. A great one-day experience is not going to cut it after a year where we've been able to curate our own one-day experience away from the church. And so millennials might be onto something. We get very few things right. We might be right on this one.
Well, I completely agree with you in the sense that it has to be holistic. It can't be compartmentalized. I will say the side of me that loves mixed martial arts has a hard time identifying with flowers. But I think a deeper look at that illustration kind of sheds light on the fact that within the context of the church, certainly within the context of family life and also church life, there's different seasons. The idea of the flower, there are seasons, and there's time where we are growing, there's time where things are dying or being pruned. And, you know, obviously it's, well, reference in that a lot of scripture in the New Testament is connected to the agrarian society. So I do think it shouldn't once a week experience. It should be something that people are inviting into every aspect of their life 7 days a week. And therein lies the challenge, because I think the real nature of our station is for most of Tucson and much of America even now, people are questioning the real nature of the local church and what its place is right now.
You know, Pastor Jeff, I think as we're kind of, as we're spitballing here a little bit in this second segment, I think one of the things that really intrigues me most about Hope City Church is I think that if the square mile around your church was asked, what impact does Hope City have? I think a lot of people would have an answer. And to me, that should be the goal of a local church. Do the people in the square mile around you care and know? And if you left, would they realize it? And I think about the work that you support around affordable housing, around poverty alleviation. You're a business guy. You've helped lead a chamber. You're connected to the business life of your community. I think if there's more church leaders and more churches that do that, I think faith in the institution will be restored. And I think the next season of the impact of a local church as an institution is right around the corner. And in this conversation, I don't want to speak for you, Pastor Jeff, but for me, this is not a push for, you know, all of our listeners to necessarily go and be a part of a local church. It's to say, look, that was a part of the tapestry for a long time in our communities. And do churches hold that same connection? I think that's the question I'm asking, Pastor Jeff, more than anything.
Yeah, and I think you had mentioned in a previous segment that I was listening to yesterday that the community that is thriving addresses things such as affordability, opportunity, and quality of life. And the church plays a significant role in, I think, influencing the community and the culture in those ways if it is holistically doing what it's called to do.
Yeah. Pastor Jeff, I appreciate you taking these few moments to talk with us. You know, we look at our education institutions, at our Congress, at our churches, at our families, every institution in America. We've lost faith and trust in, except for the military. That's just a fact. You and I talk about the church component in a faith and culture conversation here on this program. I appreciate the work that you do and the conversations we get to have. Where can people find you off the air and connect up with you over at Hope City Church on 22nd right here in Tucson?
Yeah, if you want to hear more about what's going on at Hope City, you can find us at the website hopecitychurchtucson.com. Hope City Church also has a phone app that you can find at Encounter Media LLC.
I have that app. It looks good. You guys did a good job on
that. Thank you.
Thank you. So you can go back to your church now and go, hey, a millennial thinks my app is cool. That matters. Pastor Jeff.
Thanks for the plug.
Pastor Jeff, we'll see you next time, same place. Stay safe and healthy out there.
Thank you.
When we come back, Callie Tippett, board member for the Vail Unified School District, is my guest for the rest of the hour. We're going to dig into a board meeting that went national. How did that happen? What does it mean? We'll be right back.
CBS News at the bottom of every hour. 10:30, The Voice. Trusted local news and talk.
Your Tucson Museum of Art is pleased to share the imagery of America in The Wyeths, three generations of works from the Bank of America collection. Artistic styles vary across time and place, but the bond of family unites them and the shared spirit of human experience and American traditions. Timed ticket reservations required. Visit TucsonMuseumOfArt.org for more information and to support the Tucson Museum of Art.
The Men in Black are back. FC Tucson is our city's own professional soccer team, featuring talent from around the country and the world. They're ready to get back to business and a winning season for Tucson fans. Each one of the 14 home games this season will be uniquely curated and feature the sights, smells, and sounds of Tucson, but with the intensity of a playoff berth at Keno Stadium. Tickets now on sale. Head to fctucson.com to get yours for an exciting season of high-flying football. fctucson.com.
You love Decibel Coffee Works, the coffee of Tipping Point and the Yenser household, for their quality roasted coffee and beans. Now they're giving you even more reasons. Open now, the Scratch Kitchen at the MSA Annex will provide quick and easy breakfast and lunch with vegetarian and vegan options available to enjoy with your drink. Visit the MSA Annex right off the I-10 and Cushing to be one of the first to try. 267 South Avenida del Convento. Support for this program comes from Vantage West Credit Union, a member-owned financial institution dedicated to the mission of making this community too strong to fail. Banks own you, you own us. Vantage West, member NCUA.
Trusted local news and talk all day, every day. 1030 The Voice.
Good morning, Tucson and Southern Arizona. Welcome back into the 1030 The Voice studio for this morning's drive time hour of Tipping Point, daily in-depth news, conversation, and talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. I am your host, Zach Yenser. We just wrapped up our conversation with the show's faith and culture contributor, Pastor Jeff Loxton. The generations are engaged in the church at the lowest level since Gallup began surveying in the 1930s. Less than 50% of Americans are now involved in their church, synagogue, or mosque. What is going on? It's one of the big questions that Pastor Jeff and I have been hashing out the last few weeks. He's a pastor of a local church. Always a good conversation. We're turning now towards what will take us to the end of the hour. My conversation with Callie Tippett, a board member for the Vail Unified School District. We're going to talk about how a local school board meeting went national. Should children be required to wear masks on campus? Now that the county is saying that schools can make that choice on their own, or at least that's what they claim, where does Vail go from here? Two segments I'm very much looking forward to. Callie, we've been trying to have a conversation on air for about a year, just in general. It's great to finally make it happen, and good to meet you on our live line. Good morning to you.
Great to meet you as well, and I'm grateful for the opportunity to be here.
Absolutely, and looking forward to getting your side of the story. First, let's clear the air. Callie, I was getting tweets from senatorial candidates in the Carolinas that evening celebrating that the board had resigned. You're here. I'm assuming that didn't happen.
Yes, that's correct. We don't know the exact origins of that rumor, but it
nobody does.
Originated somewhere in the hallway and amongst the folks who were attending in order to protest.
I bring that a little bit up tongue-in-cheek, but that was a huge part of why it was a national story. I had family in Phoenix asking about it, and I was like, no, yeah. I'm texting with board members right now, and they're still board members. So very interesting there. But Kelly, I want to ask you this question. The quick context is mask mandates for children on campus were on the agenda for that meeting, not the one that was this week, but the one before. Parents mm-hmm. and families came in wanting to speak to that issue, and the board meeting was canceled. And I want to ask you about that. This was the part that got a lot of parents upset. Give us from your point of view, why was a 30-minute opportunity for parents to share their concerns about a mask mandate in schools? What brought things to a point where the school board felt like that meeting needed to be canceled? Why not just let the parents share what they wanted to share? And if that question sounds skewed, I don't intend it to be, but certainly that's the question out there. Your view, what happened that evening? Why did it get changed?
Sure. And, you know, I really want to address that concern. I think it's important to hear from our community, hear from our parents. And we have always provided opportunities for our parents to come and hold call to public and public request to speak. At every meeting that we hold, whether it be an online-only meeting or an in-person meeting. And that process was set up to happen that night. And as with other districts who may experience controversial topics, the passion of the community wanting to come out and speak about that, they often invite law enforcement to come and maintain order and see to the safety and well-being of all present, whether they be students brought by their parents to speak or members of the community come to speak or members of our staff who are present, as well as ourselves as board members. This being held at the district's office, we have staff there who are completely unassociated with the meeting working there. Our night crew is there doing their janitorial duties. And so, as a board member, I'm responsible for all of that. There's not one person in that building that I'm not responsible for. And I have always taken that mandate very seriously. The group actually pushed back past our employees who were trying to maintain the order of the situation, to pile the whole group into the meeting. That's when things kind of got out of control, and there were things said to staff members that were very disrespectful, very name-calling, yelling. We're holding a study session, and we have parents and community members who have come into the boardroom where we're holding the study session, and they sit very quietly and they're listening, and we're proceeding, and there's chanting going out in the hallway, and we're trying to talk about employee benefits package, and all this is going down, and some point, our staff felt like it was necessary for us to go ahead and call the sheriff's department because our initial request had been canceled just 3 hours prior to the meeting. So we had no time to make any kind of other arrangements, and so it was we were left alone until there was a situation that presented itself where we felt like we needed law enforcement to help control the situation. And they came, and our employees came to understand that, canceling the meeting would be the only way to ensure the safety of everybody there. The sheriff's department could not clear people from the building. We had our boardroom with people present in our boardroom, and then we also provide the next largest room within our district office as an overflow room, and we have seating in there, and we have the meeting is simulcast into that room so they can watch the proceedings, and then they can be called forward for their opportunity to speak to the board. And at that point, all of those places were full, and we needed to maintain order. At this point, we had a huge, large group of people just filing into the hallway.
Callie, were these all Vail Unified parents, or who was there that evening?
So there were people who came from other areas of the state to participate. I am aware of at least one person who came down from Phoenix. I'm not sure about where some of the other residents, other folks who were there actually live. But at some, there's a video that's out there that has been posted of the event. The video starts several minutes after the board meet. We actually canceled the board meeting, so you don't see any of the scene of the people, pushing staff aside and yelling in our staff's faces and that kind of thing. That doesn't get shown on the video. It's not advantageous to their cause, so they choose not to share that. And so the video online, it starts after the meeting was canceled and the sheriff is beginning to clear the building. And in that video, you'll see when we're trying to select these new board members, they're actually struggling to find somebody who lives in Vail to volunteer. You know, they're having to say, no, wait, you have to live in Vail. So
one of the big questions, Callie, is, and I'm grateful for your perspective on this. I want to get to the policy in the second segment, in light of the county's meeting yesterday about masks for children in schools. That, of course, sure, was the issue that was on the agenda. Parents and families came in masks, and the meeting eventually became canceled. Was the board in the right to cancel that meeting? There was concerns and calls that Robert's Rules of Orders and open meeting law had been violated. What gave the school board the ability legally to cancel that meeting and then to move it to a virtual setting for the meeting after?
So we have the ability to cancel a meeting right up until the end without notice. There is no legal statute that prevents us from canceling a posted meeting. What we are prevented from doing is holding a meeting without 24 hours notice. We don't wish to break that statute. We've always strived to give notice and let people know what we're doing. We're very transparent and no reason to not be public and transparent about what we do. No basis for that claim. I'm not sure why that claim was made, but you know, it didn't serve our community, and it doesn't serve anybody hearing that misinformation.
Callie, last question on this. I think it's valuable for us to hear. Again, you were there sitting on the dais that night. It's important to hear your perspective, but I am ultimately more interested in what happens now going forward. I want to talk mask policy with you in schools, but this is a good moment to do this. Real quick, last question. There is nothing stopping parents from coming to meetings. We want parents to be involved. We want families to be involved. Necessarily a large group of people doesn't on its own present any clear challenges. Was it pushing into the hallway that was the tipping point? I mean, even if only a few of those families could have spoken in a 30-minute open period, what could have made that evening go better? What would have allowed for the voices to be heard that evening in your mind?
I think some of the behavior of the people in the hallway is really the basis for that. Had we had a situation where, you know, we could ask people to be respectful of our policies and be socially distant, wear masks, and also allow the meeting to go forward, so not disrupt the meeting, then I totally think that the meeting could have gone forward. And, you know, the issue with the next meeting being virtual is that the Sheriff's Department continued to state that they will not support us in having our meetings. Other local law enforcement have been willing to do so. A few days later, Sarita held their board meeting, and they had five officers present, and they were able to have a successful meeting. Parents were able to share. The Tanca Verde School District had their meeting scheduled for just a few days after our meeting, and the sheriff flat out told them, hey, we're not providing support. You need to go ahead and cancel that meeting. And so they did. They had to. Chandler School District up in Phoenix, they had one last week as well with a large group, and they had five officers present. So, you know, if we could, you know, count on some support from our local community, law enforcement, I think that would make a huge difference for us. And certainly we don't want them to come and be mass police, but we do need their help in maintaining order. Our employees aren't trained to do that, and they shouldn't even have to worry about that.
We're with Callie Tippett this morning, a board member serving the Vail Unified School District. Wanted to get from her eyes what was going on that evening, the Vail board meeting that really became a national story. The touch point, of course, being the mandating of masks for children on campus. At yesterday's Pima County Board of Supervisors meeting, Chuck Huckleberry, County Administrator, maintains that the health department has not mandated masks in schools, but instead gives professional health advice to the district, seeming to open up an opportunity for school districts to make that choice on an individual basis. When we come back from a short break, that's where we want to end this conversation, talking about where does mask policy go from here in the waning weeks of the school year, and what is the Vail policy, and Callie Tippett's thoughts on that. That and more to come on the other side of the break here on 1030 The Voice.
Trusted local news and talk all morning on 1030 The Voice.
Now open to you. The Arizona Sands Club is your new home away from home. Located inside the Lowell Stevens Football Facility, this private dining and lifestyle club is a culmination of a long-held goal to create a social gathering space within our university and community. Filled with Wildcat spirit against the backdrop of Arizona Stadium, call us today to learn how you can take advantage of our dining and meeting spaces for personal use, business purposes, and social events and celebrations. Call 621-8300.
In 1994, the University of Arizona took the bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. With over 25 years of success, Tech Parks Arizona continues to advance innovation. Whether it's 40 startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new tech park at the Bridges that just broke ground, they are integral in shaping the future of Southern Arizona. Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business. If you are current or previous law enforcement, fire, paramedic, or military and are considering buying or selling real estate, then listen up. CNC Partners is dedicated to serving those who serve. When you buy or sell with their real estate team, they will give 10% of their commission back to you and your family at closing, as well as donate an additional 5% to the charity of your choice that serves first responders and or the military. If you're interested in this program, reach out directly at 520-406-0233. That's 406-0233. Why I love where I live. It's a brand and movement that began here in Tucson to spark gratitude and celebrate the good things about where we live. Like so many businesses, they had to make changes to their hours and operations during COVID-19. But I'm so excited to announce that they are now reopened for regular hours. Go to whyiloveWhereILive.com right now to see all the new products and offerings and plan a visit to their location at the MSA Annex on Cushing off the I-10 and Avenida del Convento. Why do you love where you live?
Hey there, Ari here with the Marinas team at Nova Home Loans. We share Zach's passion on Tipping Point of shaping yours and our community's best possible future. If that looks like purchasing a home in 2021, we want to be your partner in choosing the program that is the best possible decision for your financial and family goals. Call me at 878-7518 and let me know you heard us on Tipping Point to get started.
Ariel Ari Barrera, NMLS ID 1982127. Nova Home Loans, NMLS number 3087, BK0902429. Equal housing opportunity.
Support for this program comes from Vantage West Credit Union, a member-owned financial institution dedicated to the mission of making this community too strong to fail. Banks own you, you own us. Vantage West, member NCUA.
Trusted local news and talk. 1030, The Voice.
Good morning, Tucson and Southern Arizona. Zach Yenser here, Tipping Point, back for our final segment of this Drive Time Hour with Callie Tippett, board member representing the Vail Unified School District. We, of course, talked about the story that went national, the Vail School Board meeting from a couple of weeks ago. But I want to talk a little bit of policy now. Of course, the issue that brought parents to the school was an item on the agenda around children wearing masks. I want to start out this way, Callie. We've got about 7-8 minutes. I think we can do it here. I've heard some school board members and some school districts feel threatened by Pima County should those districts pull back their mask mandate for children. But yesterday, County Administrator Chuck Huckleberry said, we're not requiring it. That's a school by school, district by district decision. What's the right answer here, Callie? What freedom does the Vail Unified School District Board have to make its own decision on mask mandate for children? I have other questions, but let's start there.
Sure.
You know, I really want to say that, you know, we've not hung our hat on Pima County's mandate, I suppose you would call it. And throughout this process, you know, from the very start, what we've been doing is taking advice from the CDC, advice from the Arizona Department of Health, and advice from our local health department, and having regular conversations with Dr. Garcia on issues related to COVID, whether it be what model of learning is appropriate for the, you know, what the community is experiencing, or the mitigation strategies that are in place. And our mitigation plan we put into place back in August, and it has served us well. It is helping us to keep kids and teachers in classrooms. You know, it's not perfect. But, you know, when you think of the mitigation strategies like Swiss cheese and you layer each one with holes in it on top of each other, eventually you have a fairly solid piece of protection, I guess you could say, in mitigation. And masks are a tool, and it's just one of those tools that we have used to help us keep staff and keep kids in classrooms. And, you know, we're not out of the woods yet. You know, yesterday we had to shut down two classrooms and put them in quarantine. And you know, we're still fighting the battle of keeping kids in class. And what we want to do is just finish this school year strong. There's so many great opportunities at the end of the school year that are so important for kids to mark kind of what they've been through in the year that they've had together, and let's protect those.
Kelly Tippett, I want to ask you about the science, but I think one of the big questions that I've heard out there, and I want to fit this in for sure before we run out of time, is the current mitigation strategy is going to run out here at the end of the school year. A lot of parents are saying, look, if we don't stand up now and make our voices heard on this issue, and I'm not on this show today saying who's right or wrong, I'm saying that parents say, look, we need to stand up for this issue. We feel it's important because we are afraid that when we come back to classrooms that the school district is going to put in place the same mitigation strategies. Kelly Tippett, are you able to forecast in any way what happens as kids get back into school in the fall? Will you be pushing for kids to wear masks in the next school year?
I know that there will come a time where our kids are back in classrooms and mitigation strategies are not even part of the conversation. And we've always been laser focused on moving in that direction since last March. And we've never deviated from, you know, the plan that's the ultimate goal here, right? And when that trigger happens, I'm not entirely sure. We don't really have any good data on when that should happen. And so for the next school year, one of the other pieces of information we'll be adding to our repertoire of information as we make decisions on starting the next school year is we actually are going to be sending out a parent survey and asking parents their opinions about mitigation strategies and wanting to get their feedback, and that feedback will be a part of that decision. I can't put my stake in the ground to say what date today, but I want you to know I would like for it to be the start of the school year, but that will very much depend on what happens in our community with the spread of COVID-19, which is out of my control.
Callie Tippett, board member for the Vail Unified School District. We've got 2 minutes and ticking here. To me, the science has, at least until recently, been very unclear, except for the fact that schools are the safest place for children. We know that both spread and reception of COVID-19 has been less in younger children. Is the science that you're hearing now different, that masks are an actual mitigation strategy? And if there were families who came in and said, I don't want my children wearing masks, or there's a medical reason why not, if 20-30% of students weren't wearing masks and 70% of students were by choice, does that pose a problem in your mind?
So we know that how the mask works is it doesn't protect you from a virus. What it does, it protects you from spreading something that you might have. It kind of muffles the spread of something that you might have. And we know that COVID-19 is one of those things that can exist asymptomatically in children and adults. And so the universal masking helps prevent an asymptomatic person from, a widespread of their virus. It just muffles it a bit. We know it doesn't prevent it. And that's why we said it's a layering of mitigation strategies, and there's several in place. And when we combine them together, what we found is that they're effective. And we know that because schools aren't places of significant spread, but schools are existing with masks. And so if we remove that tool, what happens? It removes that one opportunity.
Callie Tippett, like I said at the beginning of the hour, we've been trying to have a conversation with you for about a year. Thank you for your service in the Vail Unified School District. I hope this won't be our last conversation, but thanks for coming on to share what you saw that evening and your thoughts on mask mandates in schools going forward. I appreciate it.
Thanks. We're going to get there. I promise you, we're going to get there.
Callie Tippett, board member, VUSD, thank you so much. Stay safe and healthy out there.
You too. Bye-bye.
Tucson, that does it for us today. When we come back, ASU President Michael Crow is on tomorrow. What does he think about community colleges being able to give four-year degrees? Also, PFA's Davis Monthan. We'll talk to ADEQ Director Cabreras as well. See you tomorrow, Tucson.